Bring me all of your dreams, you dreamers. Bring me all of your heart melodies that I may wrap them in a blue cloud cloth away from the two rough fingers of the world. And that is what poetry may do. Wrap up your dreams. Protect and preserve them and hold them until maybe they come true. Columbus dreamed of finding a new world. He found it. Edison dreamed of light, more light, and he made light. All the progress that human beings have made on this old earth of ours grew out of dreams. That is why it is wise, I should think, to hold fast to dreams. For if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field, frozen with snow.
Mm-mm-mm. That was the voice of Langston Hughes reading his poem, Dream. And we're reading that because the second Charm City Langston Hughes Literary Forum and Book Fair will take place this Saturday, February the 1st, at the New Shiloh Baptist Church. WEAA's very own Sandy Mallory will receive the second annual Langston Hughes Literary Award. More information at 443-783-7974 or right here on the Mark Steiner Show with Lou Fields, historian and co-founder and president of the Baltimore African-American Tourism Council of Maryland, Inc., one of our great historians, knows more about this town than almost anybody that I know historically. He's in the studio and one of the people who helped put this festival together. Larry Gibson's in the studio with us, professor of law at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law, and he also has written a number of books, including the latest one, The Young Thurgood, The Making of a Supreme Court Justice, and Larry and Lou. It sounds like a comedy team. Welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you for having us.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Join us. Write us an email, steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner or jump on our Facebook pages. So let me start with Lou. Just talk about this festival. This is something we talked about last year when you came to
You
launched this for the first time.
Yes, indeed. In 2012, actually, it was July 2012. You were kind enough to host us, and I'm so happy to be here again, particularly being joined by Professor Gibson. And on Saturday, as you mentioned, February 1st, we are inviting the general public to a free event honoring the literary genius of Langston Hughes. And in so doing, we're going to have about 18 authors, four children's book authors, Professor Gibson, Attorney Dwight Pettit, and we have some other drama writers, some inspirational books, Christian books, and even a first responder, a fellow who was in 911, is coming as an author.
Huh. And I would say, let me just throw out here, because February 1st is a very significant day because that's the birthday of Langston Hughes, was born that day in 1902. So this is his birthday.
Yes.
On the day of the
festival.
We'll put that as well. His exact birthday.
Yes.
The next week, not the next day, but his exact birthday.
Yes. And I found, Mark, in studying and doing Black History programs, as this is my 23rd, I wondered when I rediscovered Langston in mid-July of 2012, his birthday being February 1st, why in 20-some-odd years I hadn't heard of anyone doing a program even saying that and bringing that to our attention, that on February 1st, the kickoff day for Black History Month, we have a great literary person like Langston Hughes, and no one knows that.
Langston Hughes, I mean, he came out of a world. It made me think of Thurgood that you wrote about, of a family that was so deeply involved in the battles for human rights and civil rights, abolition, reconstruction. He came out of this world and then was this just powerful literary, artistic explosion, I thought.
And we call a major part of that the Harlem Renaissance. Conte Cullen, Gene Toomer, Sterling Brown, Langston Hughes, but as you point out, there was a connection between Langston Hughes and who I've been paying most attention to lately, Thurgood Marshall. They were classmates at Lincoln University.
Right.
Langston Hughes was a little older than Thurgood, so he came to college late. He had already was an accomplished poet, and they were classmates. And so if you just live long enough, things become cyclical. So I've been thinking about Thurgood Marshall lately, and so I wrote about Thurgood and Langston in my chapter of the book about Lincoln. But actually, my first introduction to Thurgood Marshall was in 1962. You will remember this. Lou's too young. You remember coffee houses in the, what we call the beatnik area? Well, I used to read black poets, we called them Negro poets at that time, in a place called Coffee and Confusion in Washington, D.C. And one of the persons I read a lot of was Langston Hughes. So my interest in Langston Hughes more recently is his connection with Thurgood Marshall, but by earlier was long before I was paying much attention to Thurgood Marshall. Before we end today, I hope to have time
to read a
poem from of Langston Hughes that's connected to another interest of mine, which is President Barack Obama. I mean, Langston Hughes wrote a poem called "Let America Be America Again" that sounds exactly what the president was saying in his State of the Union yesterday
evening. Why don't you
read it now? Okay. I'll read portions of
Langston
Hughes' "Let America Be America Again." Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain, seeking a home where he himself is free. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great, strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed by one above. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the reed. I am the one who dreamt our basic dream in that old land while still a serf of kings, who dreamt the dream so strong, so brave, so true that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turn that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I am the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home. I am the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain and England's grassy lea, and torn from black Africa's strand I came to build a whole land for the free. We, the people, must redeem our land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plains, and all the stretch of this great green states, and make America again. That is a portion of Langston Hughes's poem, "Let America Be America Again," and that's what I think the president was saying in last night's State of the Union address.
That's a very interesting analogy there. I like that, and that's a great poem. I just think he was just an amazing figure. I mean, I know that my first discovery of Langston Hughes is, I guess, when I was 11, 12, 13, right back then when I was a little boy, and I picked up the simple stories from the Enoch Pratt Library when I was a little boy and started reading them. Okay. That's when I got
Jesse B. Simple. Yes,
Jesse B. Simple. That's what he did. That's how that was.
This
my
is a character in Harlem who was just an average guy, but he brought this person alive, and you were able to feel Harlem during the Harlem Renaissance through just the conversations and the
Simple.
Talking of Simple.
So tell us, Lou. I mean, so what's going to happen on this day?
Well, I will, but let's stay with Simple for one brief second.
Sure, please.
Simple Ashley, before he moved to Harlem, lived in Baltimore. And that's what got me so fascinated about Langston Hughes. How did he have such a connection to Baltimore?
Uh-huh.
Over the 20 years I've been doing Black History Month programs and throughout the year, I've always done Marylanders. So when I'm reading about Langston in 2012, I'm saying, why is he always talking about Baltimore? Well, Simple was married to Isabel in Baltimore, and she gave him such grief, he left Baltimore and moved to Harlem.
And I did not know that.
Yes. And even while he's writing about while Hughes is writing about Simple over the 20 years that he wrote about it in the Chicago papers, other papers, he's always referring back to Baltimore. I'm saying, why is there such a big connection to Baltimore? And eventually I see that Hughes, when he went on his national speaking tours with his poems and his books, came to Morgan State University, his favorite stop in Baltimore. He also stopped at Simmons Baptist Church, Enon Baptist Church. So he had a close relationship to Baltimore. And I'm saying, how did that happen? But it happened through his friendship with Thurgood Marshall. They were buddies. Oh. Yeah. Now, let me give you one quick quote
that
I have.
Baltimore guy.
Yeah, yeah, native here.
Right, right.
This is one of his Jesse B. Semple's quotes. Of course, Hughes is writing about things from a everyday man, Negro point of view in this time period. And Semple says, I'm telling you one thing. Life is liable to kill us before death does. I mean, how did he come up with these things? Because he would go to a fictional bar, Mr. Hughes, mm-hmm. and be talking to himself. And that's how he comes up with these stories. But at any rate, Mark, to your question, on February 1st, we've been blessed to be able to put together a cross-section of writers that people rarely get to see in one room at one time. The book Professor Gibson has penned has already won 2 national awards, Young Thurgood, The Making of a United States Supreme Court Justice. So we congratulate you, and we appreciate the fact that your busy schedule, you're going to be able to be there with us.
I'll be there, and I'll be signing my book.
That's right.
You'll be signing your book.
I'll be signing my book.
Thurgood.
Yes. I'll have my credit card machine, $20.
Yeah.
You have your own credit card machine now?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Isn't that interesting? And here's the tie-in. He's writing a book about Young Thurgood. Attorney Dwight Pettit has recently penned a book about his life as an attorney and what he had to go through moving from Baltimore to Harford County, his life. Well, the theme from the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, the theme for 2014 is civil rights in America. So a part of the literary fair will be a discussion on how writers, black writers in particular, can use their pen and the spoken word to be civil rights advocates. Langston Hughes was a serious civil rights advocate.
What's that?
He wrote some really stalking, striking words back in the 40s, 50s, and all the way up to his passing.
And even, I mean, one of the things that struck me about Langston Hughes always was that when you really delve into his early works, I mean, he wrote the poem you read, that you read, mm-hmm. Where he reaches out to all of America, crosses racial lines all the time, and believed mm-hmm. in that kind of solidarity. But he was also, people don't realize that Langston Hughes was also, I don't know if he didn't coin the word, but his poetry and his work and his writing was all about black is beautiful. He really believed in the black world. Let me read this one piece, read your next poem, okay?
Okay.
He wrote this in 1926 when he wrote for The Nation. He put a lot of poems in The Nation back in that era. And he wrote this thing, this is a part of a poem called The Negro Artist and the Racial Mountain.
Yes.
The younger Negro artists who create now intend to express our individual dark-skinned selves without fear or shame. If white people are pleased, we are glad. If they are not, it doesn't matter. We know we are beautiful and ugly, too. The tom-tom cries and the tom-tom laughs. If colored people are pleased, we are glad. If they are not, the displeasure doesn't matter either. We build our temples for tomorrow, strong as you know how, and we stand on top of the mountain, free within ourselves.
Well, that's powerful. But there was also a lighter side
absolutely.
To
Langston
Hughes.
Here you go, right?
and one of my favorite poems was a poem that he wrote in 1942, just about the women, the attractive women of Harlem that he saw, and where he describes their different complexions. And it's called Harlem Sweeties, and it goes as follows. A Sugar Hill, by the way, is a part of Harlem. Have you dug the spill on Sugar Hill? Cast your gems on this sepia thrill. Brown sugar molasses, caramel treat, honey gold baby, sweet enough to eat. Peach skin girly, coffee and cream, chocolate darling out of a dream. Walnut tinted or cocoa brown, pomegranate lipped, pride of the town. Rich cream colored to plum tinted black, feminine sweetness, Harlem's no lack. Glow of the quince to blush of the rose, persimmon bronze to cinnamon toes. Blackberry cordial, Virginia Dare wine, all of these sweet colors flavor Harlem of mine. Walnut or cocoa, let me repeat, caramel, brown sugar, a chocolate treat. Molasses taffy, coffee and cream, licorice, clove, cinnamon to a honey brown dream. Ginger, wine gold, persimmon, blackberry, all through the spectrum, Harlem girls vary. So if you want to know beauty's rainbow sweet thrill, stroll down luscious, delicious, fine Sugar Hill. Langston Hughes, Harlem Sweeties.
Many-sided man.
Yes.
Many-sided man.
Multifaceted, and his metaphoric, his use of metaphors to tell his story. And I think here, this writer, I pulled this from a writer, William Dean Howells, and here's what he said about Langston. He says, Hughes wrote with passion, clarity, and a great deal of humanity, blending a critical awareness and condemnation of oppressive ideologies and institutions with an ironic, blues-toned sense of humor that sought the comic in the tragic and celebrated the hurling power of laughter. And I think as his career continued from the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s, he began to be seen as a radical. Because some of the things he was writing, even though he was known as a poet, he was really one of the leading men of that time in terms of when you read the Afro-American newspaper, when you read the Chicago Defender, you would see Langston Hughes. He was a contributing writer for the Afro for many years. And his columns, not just to Just Be Simple, but right. He covered, when he was in Haiti and other parts of Russia, he would always write back to America. And his writing would be in those newspapers. And he began to have a sense of identity with the black community, but also worldwide. He went to Cuba. He did all kinds of things. Even before he's like 40 years old, he's been around the world almost twice.
Right. I mean, he was a man who
was... That's right. He came to Lincoln in 1926. Also in 1926, he published a large collection of poems called The Weary Blues. Let me read one of... This is a Langston Hughes poem from the year that he is a freshman at Lincoln University. It's called The Negro Speaks of Rivers. I've known rivers.
Oh, yes.
I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood and human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo when it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. That's written by a man who was 24 years old when he wrote this poem.
And he died so young. He was only 65 when he passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very young, actually, the older I get.
Another interesting thing about that period, the 20s and the 30s, is that they would have different styles. Like Paul Ernst Dunbar would write in the dialect, and then, but to make it clear that they had absolute command of the language, they'd write in a different form. And Langston wrote some poems in a dialect. There's one here that's a famous one, Mother to Son.
Oh, yes.
Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time I've been a-climbing and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't no light. So, son, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find it a little kind of hard. Don't you fall down now, for I's still going, honey. I'm still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
He had a life that was also kind of, I would say troubled, but he went through a lot in his life, as well. I mean,
yes.
I mean, you were talking about when he wrote for the Afro in the 1930s. He was a correspondent covering the Spanish Civil War on the Republican side. He wrote back for the Afro and other newspapers around the country, other labor newspapers in the country. He was part of a revolutionary movement in the 30s and 40s. In 1940, he didn't even want America to go to war. He thought what was going on with the black people in America meant that we shouldn't be part of this war. He changed his mind later, but I mean, he went through a lot, and people are now wrestling also with Langston's own sexuality, his being gay.
Yes.
And people didn't want to, his closest friends knew and didn't care. As a dear friend of mine who grew up who was the daughter of Henry Lee Moon, who was the editor of Crisis Magazine,
mm-hmm.
would always talk about Langston and Thurgood coming to their house, and talk about it by new, but nobody really cared in that close circle. You know, I mean, so he was a very complex character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important to kind of let his complexity flourish.
Yes, you know? Yes. Well, you have to look at his earliest beginnings. He's born out in the Midwest. He's
right.
the son of Kansas and Illinois and places like that. His father, he had a very troubled relationship with his father. His father left home early, and Langston reunited with his father in Mexico, and they never really could really hit it off. His father wanted Langston to be an engineer. And Langston,
right.
of course, wanted to have pursue a career in writing. So they struck up a bargain. Our father would finance his education at Columbia if Langston would go into a certain studies engineering. And, of course, that didn't work out too well, which is how he ended up at Lincoln. When he went to the schools, like in Cleveland, he was the only black in his class. So he's nominated and elected or selected as class poet. And he said that was because they felt Negroes had rhythm, and he was the only one in the classroom. And so even when he began writing about some of the stories that he felt for oppressed people, I think that's one of his biggest motivating factors, his sensitivity towards oppressed people, not just black, but particularly African Americans. And eventually, like many of that time, he was perceived to be leaning left towards the Communist Party, because they spoke to non-racial situations. And eventually he had to go before the
House of American Activities Committee.
Yeah, so he had not an easy life.
Yeah, and that was a very hard moment for him. We have literally 2 or 3 minutes left in the segment, so we want to make sure people know how to get there.
I want to do one short poem.
We have like 2.5 minutes left here.
This is about a jazz artist. Droning a drowsy syncopated tune, rocking back and forth to mellow croon, I heard the Negro play down on Lenox Avenue the other night. By the dull parlor of an old gas lamp, he did a lazy sway. He did a lazy sway to the tune of those weary blues. With his ebony hands on each ivory key, he made that old piano moan with melody. Old blues, swaying to and fro on a rickety stool, he played that sad, ragged tune like a musical fool. Sweet blues coming from a black man's soul. There's a longer part, but I'll stop there.
Well,
fascinating poem, because he had another interest just in the jazz musicians. This man had so many different things that he was interested in, and
he had
this complete command of the English language and could write it in so many different mm-hmm. ways.
I mean,
not just poems, but the Jesse V. Bample stories
right.
as well.
And that's why we all have to get there this Saturday. And now what you were saying made me think of this. That he was on this Weary Blues album with Charlie Mingus reading
mm-hmm.
his poetry. He loved mm-hmm. jazz. He was part mm-hmm. of that whole world. And Larry Gibson, of course, professor of law, University of Maryland School of Law, and author of Young Thurgood, Making of a Supreme Court Justice, which you can buy at the Second Charm City Langston Hughes Literary Forum and Book Fair. It'll take place this Saturday, February the 1st, on Langston Hughes' birthday at the new Shiloh Baptist Church. WEA's own Sandy Mallory will be receiving the second annual Langston Hughes Literary Award. For more information, 443-983-7974. And Lou Fields, of course, historian, co-founder of African-American Tourism Council of Maryland, and the man who created this festival in the studio as well. Good to have you both with us.
I really appreciate it, Mark. Thanks a lot, WEA.
Thanks for having me. I'll be delighted to sign your book tomorrow, Saturday.
Saturday. And we're going to go out with another piece of Willie Dixon, Trouble, who died on this day in 1992, one of our great artists, and reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. And the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andrea Milton. Our theme music is Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear the show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, find out about the festivals and what our guests are talking about. We talked about on the show today, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, you can also download our podcast now on iTunes. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.